Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Somehow, God is in me, and there's a sense in which I am like God and man all at once.
Many religions claim that we will all eventually be gods. The Bible says something so much better. It says, no, God will continue to be God. Man will continue to be man, but God will come upon man.
No way!
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Evangelical churches should love this. This is Wretched Radio because evangelicals tend to be a rather trendy and pragmatic lot. Would like to share with you a trend. It's not a good one, but it's a trend nevertheless, which I hope evangelical churches jump all over. This is a trend that is bad, that should be addressed by the church. Unlike typical trends, which evangelical Christianity tends to jump on, bad ideas, bad methodologies, what's the current latest zeitgeist? Hey, what's hip, what's happening? We'll be that. No, not talking about those bad trends. I'm talking about the bad trend of prodigal children. I'm talking about the trend of parents who are separated from their kids. Children who will not speak to their parents. This is an issue that I recognized a number of years ago in speaking to good Christian parents, not perfect Christian parents. There is no such thing. But they tried to raise up their child to love the Lord, and they goofed. Of course they did. I do, you do, we all goof. But overall, you would be able to say, in looking at them, they're good parents. They're good Christian parents, and yet their kids despise them. They've run away from them. They won't talk to them. And parents are heartbroken. And typically with that, of course, you've got kids that aren't believers. They walk away from parents. They walk away from their faith. And I think, at least in part, it is because our culture has been screaming at our kids and we have not been responding, even with a whisper. The world tells kids parents are stupid. All of the commercials make dad look like a dum-dum. Parents, they're just all over my case. And what are most of the sitcoms that involve kids about? How do we get away with it so that mom and dad don't find out? Because they don't understand. They don't know me. They don't know what it's like. And the world tells me I'm amazing. I can do anything that I want to if I just set my mind to it, believe in myself. I know everything, and I'm an autonomous self, which is exactly the message of the world. You're autonomous from everything. By the way, historical note, Western civilization has not always thought in those terms, although it has been a battle, because so much of our founding was indeed based on autonomy, that we are individuals with individual rights. Really cool. Love the concept. But the development of the Marlboro man, that you are your own person, you're your own self, what is the implication? You don't need institutions. You don't need family. You don't need church. You're you. You don't submit. You're the center of the universe. That's the message our kids keep hearing. And what does the church say in return? Cue the crickets. Absolutely nothing. And so it is. Kids in good Christian homes, they're told by the world something that their flesh craves, autonomy, not to have to submit and honor parents, but to live any way that I want to. After all, I can get an abortion without their permission. I can change my body parts without their permission. We, as a society, make parents virtually irrelevant. After all, it doesn't take parents to raise a child. It takes the government to raise a child. More bad French philosophy. And how have we responded to this? Have we encouraged the kids? Hey, your mom and dad are the bee's knees. You are blessed by having your mom and dad. And guess what? You have the privilege and joy of honoring them all of the days of your life. And if you find that onerous, perhaps this will be a selfish motivation, but believe me, you're going to enjoy this when you are older and your kids are big. They're going to honor you. And we're going to encourage them and remind them, just as we're encouraging and reminding you. And you can even remind us to honor our parents. We haven't done that, have we? The silent pain and secret shame in our churches. This came out January 18th. Paul Todges. I'm seeing this more and more and more. I saw it years ago in talking to parents at homeschool conventions. Homeschool parents aren't perfect. Believe me, I know. We were homeschool parents. And so if we are at all typical, then there's plenty of sin in the house. But you would see these kids at the homeschool convention that were well behaved, that were acting appropriately and not being obnoxious. But that's not all the kids. Yeah, they're older kids. They're gone and they've left. They don't talk to us. Whoa, what happened? Now, I grant you, let's just say some of those Christian parents who homeschooled their kids, they were oppressive. Let's just say they were heavy-handed. Let's just say there was a disconnect between morality and justification. Let's just say all of that happened. Is that an excuse for the kid to not honor their parents? No, it's not. And yet, how much preaching have we been doing to our kids? Hey, you want to be different than the other kids? Here it is. Honor your parents. The next time that you're invited to go to the party and everybody's like, yeah, you're going to come, and you go, I'm going to honor my parents. They wouldn't want me to go to this. Oh, dude, can you feel the peer pressure? And where's the church? Where's the church? Now, here's another aspect of this subject that perhaps we've neglected. The hearts of the parents of the prodigal children. Crushed, broken, devastated. You see them in church Sunday morning. How are they doing? Fine. Fine. Good. How are you? Fine. So have you heard from Sammy? No. But everything's good. Yeah. Everything's good. Maybe not everything is so good. And maybe the church could become a center and a place where parents with broken hearts because of prodigal children can feel safe to express that. Shouldn't church be the place we can do that? I mean, honestly, isn't that the label that we were all given when we were born again? It was an admission that we are not perfect parents, perfect spouses, perfect anything. Do we need any sort of icebreaker on the subject? Isn't an identification with Jesus Christ our icebreaker into being very clear, I am not perfect? How can we help these parents? Asked Paul Todges, really good biblical counselor and pastor, by the way. We need to break the silence in our churches and surround hurting parents with loving community, as well as minister gospel hope to hearts that are tempted to become overwhelmed by feelings of shame. Look around in your church, and you are going to find somebody who has not shared with anybody that they've got other children because they're gone. Where are they? We don't know. And it's shameful, and they're heartbroken, and they don't feel like they can talk about it. This is from Paul Todges, I think, really, really helpful stuff. A gentle prompt from a church counselor or pastor, a shepherd, an elder, may be necessary to move the hurting parent to confide in one or two trustworthy, spiritually mature believers. Direct them to biblical examples of vulnerability, reminding them that God's grace empowers them in weakness. This humble vulnerability will pave the way to the development of loving community and devotion to prayer. That's Colossians 4:2. That's what happens. We start bearing one another's burdens. We love for one another, and we pray like nobody's business because our hearts ache with those whose hearts are aching. Doesn't that sound like a nice place to be? Wouldn't that be nice? I'm not talking about a sin dump. Hey, morning, everybody. I'm not fine. I was looking with lust this morning in the parking lot. Thought everybody should know about that because I'm vulnerable. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a community where people don't go, oh, I had no idea that you had lustful thoughts. I mean, honestly, I thought you were a Christian. My children aren't like that. I love it. I really enjoy this, maybe in a sinful kind of way, when I see people go public with their parenting blogs to help other parents to become magnificent parents. And their firstborn is 3. Okay. You get back to us when they're 13. We'll talk then. Wouldn't it be nice to be in a community where we could actually be vulnerable with one another? Maybe from the pulpit, maybe in Sunday school. Not doing this just big expose on how awful my thought life is, how terrible my tongue wags, how angry I can get at my children. Not everything needs to be disclosed, but when it's a hurting heart and help is needed and comfort could really help to heal, shouldn't we be able to? Break the silence through vulnerability. It will create loving community. Further, often parents of prodigals suffer in silence because they feel ashamed. They typically feel like a failure and believe their child's rebellion must somehow be their fault. It's not. Yep, you were a bad parent. Congratulations, join the club. It's not your fault that they're not saved. They must carefully guard their hearts against the crippling power of morbid introspection, which overanalyzes their past actions. Instead, they need to redirect mental energies to set their minds on Christ. That's what we all need to be doing all the time. Why? Because if you are feeling guilty again from the same sins that you've been forgiven of, you need to look to Christ. On the other hand, if you've been thinking, you know, I've been doing pretty well, you need to look to Christ and discover, oh no, you've not been. God accepts the righteousness of Christ, not ours. We don't measure up either way. We need to be looking at Christ, and maybe, just maybe, if we would do more of that in our churches, in our lives, in our Sunday school classes, from the pulpit, maybe we would be shocked to discover how many hurting hearts we have in our midst and how the Comforter could help them if gospel balm is applied. Doesn't that sound like a nice place to be a member of which to be a member? This is Wretched Radio. Brilliant. I have been telling you the Masters Academy International is brilliant. Thoughtful, biblically conceived, equipping ministry, training indigenous pastors to rightly divide the word of truth and shepherd local congregations 17 countries around the world. But they do it in a way that is absolutely brilliant.
There's a danger in theological education done in abstraction from the local church. You produce eggheads that simply don't know how to walk people through life issues. We need to have theological education tightly interwoven with church life.
That is precisely what the Masters Academy International does. It trains pastors in conjunction with the local church. It is brilliant and so effective, and it bears so much fruit. Please consider supporting TMAI at wretched.org/pastor.
Hey, thanks for being here and listening to Wretched Radio today. We are always so grateful when you share your wretched stories with us, or your comments, your questions, your conundrums, and your snarks. And there's two easy ways to always share with us. First, you can email Wretched at idea@wretched.org, or you can leave us a voicemail on Beep Talk at 1-877-282-BEEP. Either way, we love hearing from you. Just like this story we recently received from Callie, who says, "Hey Todd, we're so thankful for your ministry. You continue to bless our family with sound content and counseling, and we've been supporting y'all since 2010. We trust you and your counsel." Well, thank you so much, Callie. Send us more of your wretched stories, comments, questions, and conundrums and snarks at idea@wretched.org or by calling Beep Talk at 1-877-282-BEEP. idea@wretched.org or 1-877-282-BEEP. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Despite what all of the headlines say, there is some very good news happening around the globe. Jesus is still fulfilling his promise to build his church. Nothing is going to stop it. And right now in Eastern Europe, he is doing just that through the Tomorrow Clubs, kids clubs all throughout very poor Eastern European countries. And thanks to you, wretched person, more and more clubs are being sponsored, more and more kids are being saved, and more churches are being strengthened. Paul Marty from the Tomorrow Clubs.
Every time we visit a Tomorrow Club and talk to kids and leaders, we are blown away by the gospel's power to change lives. And the Wretched audience has been such a big part of making that possible.
Would you please consider sponsoring your very own Tomorrow Club? $30 a month. 30 Little Disciples. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Revelation. General revelation is God's act of making himself known through his creation. A part of general revelation is the sensus divinatus, a sense of the divine. God has given every person an undeniable awareness of his existence. There are no true atheists, only rebels in denial of what every person knows to be true.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And as long as we're being nice, let's talk about your pastor's wife. This is Wretched Radio. Hey. Don't look at me like that. You talk about the pastor's wife too. So let's just put all of the cards on the table and maybe consider the life of the pastor's wife. Maybe, just maybe, this woman's heart is hurting more than most inside of a church. Why? She's been living in a fishbowl. Everybody watches. There is an unwritten expectation that the kids of pastors should be magnificent. They should be under control. The wife should be amazing. She has it all together. She serves all the time. Perhaps these are myths that need to be busted so that we can even minister to our pastor's wife. And I know your knee-jerk reaction, it's similar to mine. Wait a second, she's supposed to be ministering to me. No, she's not. She's the pastor's wife. She's supposed to be godly. That's a fact. That's what I think Paul is after in 1 Timothy 3, not female deacons, but the pastor's wives. They are to be godly. But that doesn't mean that they're to be sinless, and that doesn't mean that they're called into the ministry. Their husbands are called. He's the one with the office, and they're the ones who live with him. And it ain't easy, because the pastor, that's a good shepherd, not a showman, but that's a good shepherd, his heart is constantly torn. He wants to spend more time with his wife and children, but he loves the sheep. And when the sheep are hurting or when they are straying, he's distracted. He's consumed by it. And there's the missus. She is not getting a paycheck from the church. He is. She wasn't called. She's not the one who's supposed to really be doing anything for you beyond what we're supposed to be doing for one another, which means that she is to be using her gifts as she sees fit to help you as a part of the body, and vice versa. She's not an employee of the church. She's a fellow member of the church. And as we talk about pastors who have given up so much for you and for me, most likely, this is not always the case, but most likely you have a pastor who is transplanted. They moved from a different region of the country to come and serve you and your family, and she came with. She probably gave up being with family. She probably gave up familiarity. She probably gave up a lot of childhood memories. Why? Because she's married to her husband who took a call. And you get her blessing in your midst. But she is not called to be the one who fixes stuff around the church. It's just assumed, you know, the church kitchen is a mess. Where's the pastor's wife? I don't know. Where's your wife? Where are you? We perhaps have some baggage that we need to unpack with the pastor's wives. This is from the Aquila Report. This was written by Janie Ortland. The Ortlands, I think, are a big Presbyterian bunch. Going to be introducing you to a book written by one of them, and it's a beauty. But this is Janie, who is the wife of a pastor, has been for decades, talking about five myths about being a pastor's wife, starting with, my pastor's wife is biblically educated. Your assumption is she's a theologian. Some of them are. Not all of them are. And sometimes we expect them to be. When they're not, they're learning just like you and I. Her husband studied Greek and Hebrew, I hope, but she didn't. She probably didn't take systematic theology multiple semesters. He did. Do you expect her to be a theologian? Do you ever maybe have a conversation with her and you're shocked that she doesn't know everything that you do? Why? We wouldn't be with anybody else in the congregation, would we? Why the pastor's wife? Number two, my pastor's wife has spiritual gifts that she will use publicly in our church. This is a great quote from I believe it's pronounced Janie Ortland. It's J-A-N-I. Hope I've got that right. What spiritual gift? If you had your druthers, if you could assign a spiritual gift to your pastor's wife, what would it be? What would it be? All right, Jimmy. You are going to represent the tens and tens of people.
All right.
Your pastor's wife, you wish that, and just think in general terms, not your current path, but if a pastor's wife had any spiritual gift, it would be?
Discernment.
Discernment.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
I don't know.
All right. Maybe that she has the ability to teach the little kids.
Yeah. Oh, well, for sure.
The women's ministries. That would be good.
Yeah.
Brace yourself for this from Janie Orland. I believe the greatest spiritual gift she can give to her church is to love and care for her pastor husband. I love this because when you think about it for like more than a nanosecond, it's so true. Who's the shepherd of the church on earth? Well, of course, Jesus is the chief shepherd, but the under shepherd in your local manifestation of God's kingdom on earth is the pastor. How do you want him to be doing at home? You want him thriving, don't you? You want him doing great. You want him happy. You don't want him to be bogged down with burdens, do you? And if his wife is lifting that load from him, the entire church is blessed. Maybe your pastor's wife does nada around the church. But maybe she's working like crazy at home to keep things calm. I'm telling you, I know the value of a wife like that. I would not be able to do a fraction of the things that I do at this ministry if it were not for Mrs. Friel. I know it for a fact that the carking cares that can just be so distracting and weigh heavy on your heart, when those things are not existent inside of a home because of a godly, spirit-filled wife. Oh, man. You know, happy wife, happy life. But when your wife is supporting the pastor, you'll be blessed by it. He'll be able to do more betterer. Would you have thought of that? I wouldn't. And clearly Jimmy didn't. I wouldn't have thought of that.
No, I wouldn't have either.
It wouldn't have thought of that, but it's true. If she is working hard at home so that he can be shepherding joyfully, oh, you're going to feel that every single Sunday. Consider the implication. Everybody in the church will be affected by that. And we want her to be running the nursery. Ain't nothing wrong with that, don't get me wrong. But running the nursery, it's going to affect a few people. A cheerful pastor who's rested? Woo! Myth number 3. It's easy for my pastor's wife to build a family superior to mine. The expectation is, pastor's wives, it's all perfect. Again, from Janie Ortland. A surprising statement. It is perfect when your pastor's wife does not have the perfect family. What every congregation really needs to see is a family serving God with wholehearted devotion while dealing with the realities of sinful parents raising sinful children in this broken and sinful world. That authenticity and vulnerability will be a more convincing witness for Christ than building a perfect family, which is not doable. Myth number 4. My pastor's wife doesn't care about me because she doesn't remember my name. That happens. People leave churches over that. She didn't. This is the third time I've had to tell her. I know it. I even sent her a card. And we leave over that. Okay. How might you help her? This is from a pastor's wife. Just smile at her as you look her straight in the eye and say, I can't imagine how many names you have to keep up with. I'm Jane Smith. Now, you should put your own name there. Don't say Jane Smith because that would be weird and not accurate. I'm Jane Smith, and I'm happy to tell you every time we meet, if that would just help you to lift a burden from your overloaded shoulders. Well then, wouldn't that be a blessing to her? And most likely, she's probably going to remember your name now. I don't know who the woman was. She was super crabby. Whatever her name is, she was mad because I didn't remember her name. You'd be nice to her? She's probably going to remember your name. Myth number 5 about your pastor's wife. She's so well connected at church, she doesn't need me. Just like the pastor needs pals, so does the pastor's wife. Too many wives of pastors live a solitary and somewhat lonely life. Her husband usually works on Saturdays, while other families, they're doing stuff on Saturday, Sunday mornings, holidays. Where's he? Church, maybe all day. Your pastor's wife, probably getting the kids ready. After getting everybody to church, most likely she'll sit alone. She doesn't get to sit with her pastor during the sermon and service, does she? It is not easy for her. So go ahead, initiate friendship toward her. Ask if you could take her out for coffee. Bring her some cookies. Get to know her better. And then, without prying or building up an arsenal of gossip, bring some cookies. Without prying, ask her about herself. How did she come to faith? Tell me your salvation story. What's your family like? What is she like? What do you do in your spare time? In other words, get to know her as a real person and as a friend, not as your pastor's wife. Tell her what you love about the church, if you can. Think of reasons why you are glad that God called her family to serve Christ at your church. And you will be blessing your pastor's wife. And guess what? There's kind of a bonus that just doesn't need to be there, but not the correct motivation. You bless your pastor's wife, she'll be a blessing to her husband, and that will be a blessing to you. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I am Jimmy Hicks. The fact-checking website Snopes recently published an article deeming creationism, the doctrine that states God created the world, as a conspiracy theory. According to FaithWire, the article was authored by Paul Braderman, who's professor emeritus in chemistry at the University of Glasgow and describes himself as a skeptic and anti-creationist. He cited a 2019 Gallup poll which shows that 40% of Americans hold to a creationist view in which they affirm that God created the first humans, Adam and Eve, within roughly the past 10,000 years. Braderman wrote, quote, "Such beliefs derive from the doctrine of biblical infallibility, long accepted as integral to the faith of numerous evangelical and Baptist churches throughout the world. But I would argue that the present-day creationist movement is a fully-fledged conspiracy theory." In a phone interview with FaithWire on Monday, Ken Ham, founder of the apologetics ministry Answers in Genesis, spoke out against Braderman's piece, describing the professor as an ardent atheist with an agenda against Christians. Ham noted that Braderman has vigorously worked to prevent creationism from being taught in schools, specifically in the UK. He added that the professor has also tried to liken Christians to those who believe in QAnon conspiracy theories, along with those involved in the U.S. Capitol attack on January 6th. Ham said that's typical of what these people do. They try to demonize us by aligning us with groups that we have absolutely nothing to do with at all. Ham also rejected Braderman's claims that the AIG founder is completely hostile to science and believes that the theory of evolution is a work of Satan, in light of an article Ham wrote in 2002. He added that mainstream creationists do not personally attack atheists nor evolutionists. Well, the President of the United States, Joe Biden, will likely overturn a pro-life rule that President Donald Trump put in place that protects pro-life medical professionals from being forced to promote or perform abortions that kill unborn children. As first reported in May, President Donald Trump issued new rules that further protect doctors, nurses, and medical professionals who don't want to be forced to do abortions or refer for them. Trump announced new regulations through the Department of Health and Human Services that will more effectively enforce existing federal laws that protect the conscious rights of healthcare providers. Despite current law that has protected conscious rights for over 30 years, the lack of regulations resulted in confusion and a lack of awareness within the healthcare community, leaving healthcare personnel vulnerable to discrimination and forcing them to drop their specialties at a time of healthcare scarcity. The 440 pages of new regulations provide regulatory backbone to the First Amendment conscious rights of Americans working in the medical profession and would help ensure that no doctor or nurse would be forced to violate their conscience while serving patients. But Planned Parenthood filed a lawsuit against the pro-life protections, and while the Trump administration defended the pro-life rules in court, the Biden administration just abandoned the defense and told a federal court that it's weighing whether or not to drop the defense of the rules entirely. And that's not surprising. According to Planned Parenthood, the ability for women to kill their unborn babies in abortions is more important than the right of medical professionals to opt out of murdering babies. Of course it is, because these days what's up is down, and what's down is up, and what's right is left, and left is right, because everything is backwards in the world we're living in. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. 1054. Tensions between the East and the West had been brewing for centuries. But when negotiations between Rome and Constantinople went sour, both sides excommunicated each other, and the divide between Catholicism and Orthodoxy remains to this day.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Now I understand you, Jimmy. This is Wretched Radio. If and you recall, when asked, what spiritual gift would you like the pastor's wife to have? You said something surprising. You said
the gift of discernment.
All right. When you say the gift of discernment, you really mean being able to read somebody's mind.
Right, yeah, exactly. Fortune telling.
Not the gift of discernment biblically, but that's what you meant. Because, why?
Yeah, my wife, as a pastor's wife, experienced it quite a bit. In one particular situation where the lady in question expected my wife to know her issues without my wife having to ask her issue. She should just know what she's going through.
She's the pastor's wife.
Right, right.
She should be clairvoyant.
Right.
Which, of course, we call the gift of discernment in evangelical Christianity.
That's right.
But nevertheless, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You should just know how I'm feeling.
That's right.
You're the pastor. We do put expectations on those women, don't we?
We sure do.
We just expect them to be the ones that we called. I get it. They do need to be qualified to, but it's not about them being qualified, if you will. It's that they need to be of a certain character or the pastor isn't qualified. So yeah, we should have expectations for a pastor's family. It's spelled out biblically. I think we go beyond that though, don't we? And we just tend to think that they need to be probably the best woman in the congregation, doing the most stuff with the bestest family. That ain't all that fair. Would like to give you a gift. Whether you're a pastor's wife or not, want to let you know that the nice folks at the Master's Academy International still have Declaring His Glory Among the Nations daily scripture meditations for pastors around the world. These are often anonymous pastors who are trained through the Master's Academy International who couldn't put their name because, well, they get killed. Nevertheless, their devotions are inside of this lovely book, and it is a beast of a book. It is pushing 400 pages. Well, that would make sense. Todd, there's 365 days in the year, so there's probably going to be at least 365 pages. Thanks for the math help. It's a gift to you. It costs you zippo. Simply visit wretched.org/pastor, wretched.org/pastor. In fact, I got to tell you, Jimmy, I was thinking about the Master's Academy International when we were talking about the pastor's wife exercising the gift of really just being a great support for the pastor and the implications of that.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think about that kind of thing because that's just smarter. It's like, oh, she's just a really wonderful, supportive wife helping him out, trying to organize a home so it's not chaotic. Then everybody in the congregation feels that. That's just thinking on a level that, well, I don't tend to stumble into all that often. And that's the Master's Academy International. It's equipping indigenous men to be pastors, preaching rightly in their own country, in their own language, because they have learned from a master's seminary graduate. It's brilliant. It is not one of those quick and tidy sort of things that we tend to like a lot. It's a big picture. It's a big idea. It's a big concept. Train men in their own nation. They dress correctly. Their wages are appropriate. It costs a lot to send somebody to Peru or to anywhere, frankly. Now, when they live there, it's cheaper is what I'm trying to say. And it's smarter. They know the customs. They know the zeitgeist. They know what is happening in society. They get references. They can minister to people if they are rightly trained. So if while you are at wretched.org/pastor, you can sign up for that book, learn more about the Master's Academy International. It happens to be, in my estimation, a really brilliant sort of ministry. And as long as we've talked about the pastor's wife, let's talk about your other favorite subject after church, the pastor himself. You do talk about him, don't you? Guess what? He hears some of it. Because when you're busy gossiping, you're probably gossiping to a gossip. And guess what they do? They gossip to other people. It's like Prel shampoo. No. What was the name of that conditioner? I always forget the name of the shampoo from the 70s. And so on. And so on. And so on. And then the shampoo split in two. And then in four. And then in eight. and then 16, 32. And then the other one, it was balsam. There was a conditioner. I can smell it right now. A hair conditioner called Selsun Blue.
Yeah, that's it.
No, that's a dandruff shampoo, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Selsun Blue. No, this is balsa Selsun Wood thing. It's when conditioner first came out. It was like a new thing. What? I've got to do more than just put shampoo on my head? Oh, the burden that we put upon ourselves. When you gossip to somebody, they gossip to somebody who gossips to somebody. And by the way, they'll gossip about you. So if you don't like being gossiped about, zip, zip, zip it. Discretion. Very important, especially about your pastor, David Murray. How to criticize a preacher. Have you understood him correctly? Are you sure you got it straight? We can goof up too, you know. Number two, have I given this enough time? Oh, how many texts I wish I would have held until the next day. How many times I wish that I'd held fire until I actually learned a little bit more. Same thing is true with your pastor. Have you ever waited a day and wish you had fired it off earlier? Ever? I have not. Because every single time, it just seems that the next day it has a different light to it, doesn't it? It just feels, the whole issue just seems to be different. Why didn't I wait? Now I look stupid. I look really angry because I was and is. How to criticize a preacher. Have you prayed about it before you talk to him? Please don't be the missile. You know, the missile. You've seen them if you're not it. If you haven't seen it, you're the missile. The pastor says, go in peace. Boom! And you are like a rocket right toward the guy. Hey, did you know what R.C. Sproul said about that verse? Okay. All righty. Not needed. Rocket. Pray about it. Four. Is this just a personal preference or a biblical principle? Is it really something theological or just a nit that you like to pick? Maybe your pastor wouldn't be so terrible in your mind if you were letting some of these things go. Number five, have I thought about the best way and time to communicate? Sunday probably isn't the best time. Neither is Monday. Tends to be pastor's day off. They're like restaurants. They close down on Mondays. That seems to be the trend. Have you noticed that? Is that just kind of a COVID thing or has that been going on for a long time?
That or Fridays.
What?
Yeah, sometimes Fridays. But
no.
Mostly Mondays because, you know.
What restaurant closes on Friday? Have you been doing the crack again? What are you talking about, Willis? Friday, that's fish. Sorry, that's if you're in Wisconsin. Sorry, lost my head for just a moment. By the way, is Friday night fish a big thing in Tennessee? I bet it's not.
No way. It is. It certainly is.
What are there, fried eight Catholics catfish. In Tennessee? Are you kidding me? There can't be fish night.
Yep, it sure is.
Okay. I stand corrected. Is it just a preference or a biblical principle? Have I thought about the best time and way to communicate? It is not Sunday, it's not Monday, and it's not on fish night. Don't do that. Am I doing this out of the right motive? Why do you need to correct your pastor? How often has it been, perhaps, because you just read something and learned something? And you heard him say something that he probably didn't even have in mind anyway, but it didn't fully align with what you just learned, and you have to tell him that he was wrong about it so that you can let him know how much you've been learning? Yeah. Number seven, am I focused on just spraying pellets? In other words, you say, oh, you know, and another thing. Oh, and as long as I've got you, you're a shotgun. Don't be doing that. Number eight. Have I considered the possibility that I may be one of many others doing the same? Because you might just be the straw that breaks your pastor's back. Maybe somebody else has already talked to him about it. Find out. Like, the pastor is strong. He's not a sissy. If he is, he's probably in the wrong field. But you don't want to be piling on the guy. He does care for you. He really does. Seriously, unless you've got yourself a charlatan or a crook in your pulpit, the guy cares about you. And you say, well, but I don't feel it. Okay, is he there? Is he probably receiving a less than average wage? Did he transplant his family? Okay, he cares about you. Don't break his back by piling on. How to correct your pastor, number 9. Am I prepared to listen to his explanation or concede I was wrong? Could you be corrected? You might want to consider it. Of course, the guy can get defensive, but you've got to consider it, even if it's delivered poorly. Number 10. Is it in the context of previously expressed appreciation? This is a good rule. If you have never encouraged your pastor, you don't get to correct him, not even once. In fact, I'll even go a step further. If you don't encourage your pastor somewhat regularly, you have really not purchased the right to make the correction. Sure, you could argue, but I'm supposed to be doing that. Okay? I'm just talking about wisdom here. Instead of piling on the critiques, let's pile on the praise and the encouragement. And then when needed, we lovingly and gently correct, being willing to admit that we too could be wrong. This is Wretched Radio. 59 million people died last year from diseases like heart disease, cancer, diabetes, but the number one leading cause of death, its very own category of 42.6 million lives that ended, abortion. It is hands down the number one leading cause of death on the globe, and that statistic can overwhelm us and cause us to give up. But it should motivate us to get engaged, get involved, and fight for one life at a time. And we can do that through preborn.org/wretched. $28 buys an ultrasound. 80% of the time, mom chooses life. That is a good investment that saves lives. Would you please consider supporting as many ultrasounds as you can at preborn.org/wretched.
What are some of the best combinations you can think of? Rice and beans? Bacon and eggs? How about spaghetti and meatballs? While those are certainly all delicious choices, there's one even better. You and Wretched. Yep, when you become a Wretched Gospel partner, you and Wretched become one of the best combinations in the world. Combining our efforts allows us to reach more people all over the world with the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. It's like peanut butter and jelly. Separately, they're pretty good, but combined together, they become great. That's what happens when you become a gospel partner with Wretched. Together, we can reach millions. And for you, there's full transparency and accountability because we're ECFA approved. Get all the details on becoming a Wretched Gospel Partner today by visiting wretched.org/donate or text the word wretched to the number 44321. You and Wretched, even better than salt and pepper.
Yes, you're busy, but I suspect you could spare 2 minutes if it saved you $500 a month. Please call MediShare for 120 seconds. They will give you a quote on affordable biblical health sharing, an alternative to health insurance. You get free telehealth services, a huge network of doctors, customer support, people praying for you, and 400,000 members sharing one another's health burdens. That is what MediShare is about. And on average, you will save, whether you are a single or a family, $500 per month. It will take you 2 minutes to make a phone call and find out how you could be saving and have peace of mind. Got 2 minutes? Call 844-34-BIBLE. 844-34-BIBLE.
Books of the Bible. Lamentations is a book of poems written by Jeremiah after the fall of Jerusalem. They are marked by weeping, woes, and affliction. But even in sorrow, Jeremiah praises God. He proclaims God's justice, cries out to God for mercy, and confesses his faith in God. Lamentations teaches us a godly way to express sorrow and grow in the midst of loss. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, that was a little premature. This is Wretched Radio. Not that long ago, I'm thinking within weeks, although I have to confess to you, time is a bit of a blur these days. When does that happen? When does that switch get flipped? When all of a sudden, what day, what year are we in? When I'm telling you, I know the time, it goes tick, tick, tick the same way. Something tells me we actually get busier as we get older, that the days become a bit of a blur. When you're young, do you remember languishing during summers? You actually were like, I'm so bored. You've been bored lately as an adult? The time just goes by, and so it is somewhat recently. I actually went into all of my radio folders. Here's what they're labeled. All of the sound effects here. It says current content, bits, Christmas bits, false teachers, music sermon, stinger. That's what it said. Then I've got miscellaneous. I emptied out my false teacher folder. Specifically, Todd Bentley. That was a mistake. He's back. And one more reason you should think very long and hard about your continuationist position. Todd Bentley announces return to ministry after hearing from God. There it is. How do you tell Todd Bentley he's wrong? He heard from God, after all. A whopping year has passed since he was declared not qualified. That should have been done 15 years ago. Are you kidding me? If I hadn't deleted everything prematurely, I've got sound from Todd Bentley in Africa. Every tumor fall off! I command every tumor to fall off and die! We couldn't tell he was a false teacher then. Well, it took a bunch of scandals of the sexual nature for him to finally be deemed not qualified for leadership due to credible allegations of ungodly and immoral behavior, including predatory sexual activity. Isn't it a shame that so often these days in Christendom, it takes that kind of behavior for a false teacher to be labeled? Isn't there false teaching enough? Todd Bentley's coming back. In the summer of 2020, he was experiencing a time of healing and restoration with angels and communing with God. Isn't it amazing how much angelic activity and communing with God complete theological hacks get to be involved in? That's something. God is only working with charlatans with metal through their nose. Isn't that something? It was last summer, writes Bentley, in July, August 2020, that I had a series of angelic encounters, visions, and personal encounters with the Lord that were absolutely life-changing. How can you argue with him if God is still doing stuff like that? How can you say, no, you weren't? At the same time, Jess, that's his now wife, who was, I think, the nanny to his children with whom he was having an affair while he was getting drunk and kicking people in the stomach to get the cancer out of them. That didn't disqualify him, by the way. That didn't do it. No. Folks in his pack said that wasn't enough. It took somebody inside of his ministry going, dude's really got issues here, like nasty stuff going on. That made him unqualified for leadership. At any rate, at the same time, Jess and I used this time to see healing and incredible restoration in our own lives and marriage during this awesome season of almost daily personal encounters with the Lord. He spoke to me about my 45th birthday, which took place in January 2021. Isn't that nice that God spends so much time talking to a guy who kicks people in the stomach at a revival meeting? Isn't that nice that God does that? Spends all that time with a guy who is a complete and total philanderer who abandoned his wife and kids? And it gets worse, not to mention all of the nonsensical false teaching. He's back. I remember deleting those files. I don't know when it was, but I do remember deleting them and going, well, apparently he's found a job. I wasn't right about that. Be praying for the people that he's about to hoodwink and fleece again. And as long as you're praying, brothers and sisters around the globe, Pakistani Christians enslaved in labor camps. Why? Because they can't get jobs. They're discriminated against. So they rack up some debt. They can't pay it back. They get put into a prison camp where they can't pay it back. And they're there for life. Intense discrimination. That's actually a big deal worth praying about. I don't know if you pray for your Christian brothers and sisters overseas, but there's a number of things you could be praying for. Good pastors, that they have a Bible, that their church is growing in strength and wisdom, that they aren't being discriminated against, kidnapped, their homes or churches aren't being built, burnt down. That's what they're going through right now. And as long as we're praying for people, might want to do some praying for the Southern Baptist Convention meeting that's coming up this summer. It is, in my opinion, could be a Donnybrook. I hope it goes well. I truly do. The implications and some of the articles that I'm reading, it's not encouraging. I know there's always tense stuff that happen at these type of meetings, no matter what the denomination or convention is. But it sure appears that there are things a-brewing at the Southern Baptist Convention, and it is going to be very interesting to see how these things shake out. You've got the issue of critical theory. You've got some pastors threatening to leave. Now there's apparently SBC funding is down, according to a report that was filed inside of the SBC convention regarding the cooperative program that the ERLC, that is the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, might get defunded. People aren't happy with the leader of the ERLC. That one's brewing. Pastors that are saying, we're going to leave this place if critical theory and Resolution 9 is overturned. We're out of here. And, of course, you've got the presidential election that goes on. You've got three people running for it. And it is an interesting spectrum of folks. You've got a social justice person. You've got Al Mohler. And then you've got somebody even further to the right who is not happy with any of the social justice business. They're vying for the same position. What happens in the Southern Baptist Convention, it has a big effect. It has a big impact. In the meantime, I'm seeing other skirmishes in the Southern Baptist Convention about how we're supposed to be talking about politicians. And this is one, frankly, I actually think is worth pondering and considering. How are we to talk about evil politicians? How are we to speak to them and about them? It's a tricky balance. It truly is. And we can learn from history, not definitively, but we can learn from history. Now, I'm not saying that these men were infallible, but you typically take a look at the Protestant reformers. Woo! Did they ever speak quite forcefully about bad politicians and bad rulers? They would denounce their activities. They would talk about them and just, they would label them. Right now in the SBC, well, you've got yourself two camps on that. There are some people are going, hey, we need to be a little bit more politically correct here. There's other people that are saying, no, they're actually evil and they want to do evil things. And we need to be calling those things out. And you've got the folks who are trying to be really sensitive to society going, no, we can't be doing that. We just need to be praying for them and honoring them. That is another conversation that I think is going to be going on at the SBC. And quite honestly, I think it's something that you and I need to get figured out. And I don't think that there's a perfect rule for how we're supposed to be talking about our leaders all the time. But I think that if you're just talking about them all the time the same way, you're probably not being all that thoughtful. If you're always saying things that are politically correct, always, you're probably not being as biblical as you should be. On the other hand, if all you're doing is a scorched earth policy, you're probably not being as biblical either. I think that we need to be really wise about this, and we need to make sure that if we are indeed talking about our leaders in a way that is critical, it should be in a prophetic way, not foretelling, but forthtelling, and that we are concerned about their souls and we're calling them to repentance. And if it does come across as just snarky and angry, well, that's requiring some biblical balance, too. We need to speak truth in love. And if we can't do both, you shouldn't be doing either. You've got some people who just want to be lovey-dovey, other people that just want to just blast. There's got to be something of a balance. And I don't think it's wise to give anybody a particular rule on how we're always supposed to be talking about folks. Because we see such a broad array, don't we? We see the Bible itself saying very negative things about bad rulers. We've got permission to do so. Jesus calling Herod a fox, his nickname at the time. Now, that doesn't mean we should always be calling public officials a fox in a negative sort of way. But it doesn't mean that we should always just be squishy and nice and constantly being sensitive so that nobody ever gets offended. We're Christians. We don't try to offend, but we are an offensive people by lot, because when the truth speaks into the lies, it's not received with hugs and kisses. So it is. We're going to watch that happen in the SBC, and I would like to suggest to you that is probably an issue that you and I need to wrangle with a lot these days, because I'll tell you, it's a ditch on this side, it's a ditch on that side. We want to walk the biblical line. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.